Even though this episode actually is dropping in October, the date that I'm recording this is September. This is actually the 5th of September when I'm doing this recording. I'm preparing to head out for Seattle for 6 weeks, so I'm still home right now at the moment. So what I'm actually doing is queuing up a whole bunch of episodes so that they'll drop every Friday and have that consistency. So I'm actually doing this recording, as I say, now in early September, so I don't have any stresses when I'm in Seattle when these episodes drop week in and week out. And one of the things that's interesting about what's going on right now, just yesterday, that is the 4th of September, as I'm doing this recording, the statement on social justice was released by a group of concerned conservative evangelical Christians. The full title of it is actually The Statement on Social Justice and the Gospel for the Sake of Christ and His Church. And this is actually very relevant to the second half of the conversation that Cindy Wong Brandt and I are going to have in today's episode. This is yet another case of embattled evangelicals who feel like they're being persecuted. And it is relevant to our conversation because if you recall, if you listened to last week's episode where we ended it, Cindy and I were talking about raising children within a Christian context. And the problem is, as she pointed out right at the very end, is that children who are raised, or we could use the word indoctrinated, within a system like evangelicalism. And again, it's not just Christianity that we're describing here. We could plug in any sort of controlling religion. And I've talked about before the similarities between the Abrahamic religions, Judaism, Christianity, and Islam. But in this specific case, this statement on social justice and the gospel has just come out when I'm doing this recording, as I say. And you just listen to the language in the introduction. They feel so embattled, and they feel like Christianity, at least in America and perhaps worldwide as well, is under attack and it's under threat. And doesn't matter what level you're talking about, they are under siege from a wide variety of ungodly and terrible forces. And they say, this is the opening statement, it says, quote, in view of questionable sociological, psychological, and political theories presently permeating our culture and making inroads into Christ's church, we wish to clarify certain key Christian doctrines and ethical principles prescribed in God's Word. And it goes on to say, now listen to the language. Why is this so important to these evangelicals? Well, they say, quote, clarity on these issues will fortify believers and churches to withstand an onslaught of dangerous and false teachings that threaten the gospel, misrepresent scripture, and lead people away from the grace of God in Jesus Christ, end quote. And you can just hear the language of fear and being under attack, being under siege. The whole wording of just that little bit of the introduction I read you is just filled with that type of rhetoric. They say the Bible's teaching on these subjects, what subject? Race, ethnicity, manhood, womanhood, human sexuality. They say it's being challenged everywhere. And because this is so important to them, this is why they believe they're being persecuted. They say we have to uncompromisingly reassert and defend the doctrine of God's word at every point. Why? They say, quote, there is every reason to anticipate that these dangerous ideas and corrupted moral values will spread their influence into other realms of biblical doctrines and principles, end quote. And the whole statement is filled with, it's written in the language of affirmations and then denials. So they affirm one thing and then they deny what they believe is the opposite. And I'm going to get more into this a little bit next week in the episode with Dr. Josie McSkimming, because we're going to be talking about fundamentalism and the hallmarks of what fundamentalism does to people in terms of their mental health and psychological and sexual development. So what does that document on social justice written by a bunch of concerned embattled evangelicals, what does that have to do with my conversation with Cindy? Well, to me, it should be obvious that the evangelicals, because they feel so embattled, this is why they think it's so utterly, ultimately important to raise your children in a godly Christian environment because of these pernicious teachings that are creeping into the church, and they're going to dilute and they're going to dissolve the pure Orthodox Christianity. So now, more than ever, it's more important than ever, they think, to raise your children in this environment. And they would not at all, in any way, shape, or form, see it as predatory. They see it as their godly duty as Christian parents to raise their children in this environment. But as we're going to talk about with Cindy, she realized that it is actually predatory, or it can be predatory. Now, of course, they wouldn't see it that way. But as I say, they believe they're doing all the right things for all the right reasons. Where we ended it last week, we were talking about this predatory parenting of evangelicalism. And that's obviously quite a controversial thought, that raising your kids within a Christian or religious, overtly religious context might be predatory, and it might be damaging to their psyche and their emotions and their sexual development, and on and on and on. But the fact is, when you look at adults that have come out of this system, people like myself and just so many others in the ex-evangelical or ex-evangelical, ex-fundamentalist community, there is reports of depression and anxiety and PTSD and all kinds of sexual hangups, and on and on and on. It's virtually a laundry list of problems and issues that we have to deal with as a result of our upbringing within evangelicalism. And that is why this is such an important topic to discuss, especially if you're a parent who's deconstructing yourself, your own beliefs, deconstructing your relationship with the church. How do you then raise your children in such a way that allows them the autonomy to make their own spiritual choices and explore spirituality? Because spirituality is very important. We're not going to deny, I wouldn't say, that spirituality isn't important. I think a lot of people maybe go too far the other way with it and say, okay, now that I've walked away from the church, I've got to shut off all that side of myself, because the spirituality that you encountered within evangelicalism was so toxic, or in terms of your upbringing, like myself, very toxic, very damaging on many, many levels. But I think we need to learn to embrace spirituality, whatever that looks like. And there's a lot of different paths that we can explore. So I hope you enjoy this conversation, part two with Cindy Wong Brandt. I'm going to talk a little bit more after the episode about ways you can get a hold of myself and Cindy as well, and how you can support the work of Mindshift Podcast on Patreon. And I'm going to talk about some of the bonus content that's becoming more and more available. So without further ado, let's go on into part two with Cindy Wong Brandt. Let's finish our conversation about deconstructing the predatory parenting of evangelicalism, part two. When you look at the statistics, they say child evangelism is hugely important, because when adults grow to adulthood, they are less likely to convert once they're kind of set in their ways. But kids are much more open and malleable and suggestible. And therefore, that's why children's church and children's ministry and camps and youth groups are so important, because we got to get them while they're young. And so it's a massive part of the evangelical system, isn't it?
It's basically preying on the vulnerability of a child who's yet to develop fully their cognitive processes and able to defend themselves against teachings that might be abusive.
Well, just look at the purity culture teachings, for example. That's a big, huge one right now, isn't it? People have been shedding more and more light on this purity culture teaching within evangelicalism. What they're telling their children: they have to pray for their future spouse, and they have to remain virgins all their life until their wedding night. And that's God's plan for them. And they put this burden on kids that drives them crazy.
Telling
girls that they have to dress modestly, and if they show too much thigh or cleavage or whatever, they'll cause a man to stumble. And actually, I've heard things where if a woman or a girl gets raped, it's probably her fault for leading the man astray. And I mean, that kind of stuff comes out of the church. It does. Right. And I can't imagine the psychological, sexual, emotional damage that it would do to a young girl or a young boy growing up in such a system.
Right. Yeah. And a lot of what we've been talking about, purity system, is not just about sex either. It's about everything. It's very black and white. You're either pure or you're completely tainted.
You're impure. Right? Yeah. Again, that binary thinking.
Right. Yeah. The binary is such a problem. I recently got to interview my friend Mihi Kim Kort, who wrote a book about queering our faith. And she used her own story, coming out as queer, but to also relate it to the larger faith conversation of how queering our faith allows us to expand our view of what it means to be faithful. And it's trying to counteract this binary thinking. It's really good. I recommend it.
Yeah, it sounds really interesting. I'll have to take a look at it. Well, what would you say your faith journey, where has it taken you now? You say you've deconstructed, you've certainly walked away from evangelicalism, and you're certainly more critical of it. You've gotten some serious pushback on Twitter, at least, for sure. But where would you say you're at now? Because one of the things that's fascinating to me is talking to ex-evangelical people, I've discovered there's a wide spectrum of paths, I guess you could say, that people go down, everywhere from still remaining what they would consider some form of Christianity, all the way to going down the angry atheist route, the angry theist route. So many possibilities that people go down. Where would you kind of describe yourself on that spectrum?
Yeah, I don't know. I think I've only recently started identifying as an ex-evangelical, because for a long time I held on to the label, because not because I still believed in the tenets, but because I felt like I was responsible to evangelicalism, because I was part of the system for so long, and it's all I knew, and it was that I felt like, I guess I felt like I needed to fix it, that it was my problem to fix.
I did the same thing. That's why I started this podcast originally. As I was saying before, what I started this podcast as a way to speak to the system as someone who wanted to reform it from outside. And I realized that wasn't working and people didn't want to hear it. So I just kept on deconstructing, and that's how I ended up where I'm at now. So yeah, I know exactly.
I mean, I think it can sometimes be patronizing.
Oh, yes.
Because sometimes people, they don't want to hear you try to, they don't want you to fix them. And I'm not sure if I tried to do that, but I feel like there's certainly, I definitely went through a phase where I tried to convince people, no, not all Christians are like that. You know, there are other ways to be Christian. And now I can see how that could be a little obnoxious.
Yeah,
I would say that I'm still on my journey. I'm not sure where it's leading me quite yet. So I'm definitely identifying as an ex-evangelical because that is my past and that's my story. And I still feel like I have to bring that shade of who I am into my work now. But I think I'm all about making space for everyone to wherever they end up. You know, because I feel like I can almost relate to every path because I've maybe considered it myself.
Exactly.
And I think the main thing is I don't feel like I have to find a label for myself right this moment. Not because I think I'm above labels. It's just not a priority for me. Do I really need to say, am I still a Christian or not a Christian? Or am I an evangelical or ex-evangelical or progressive? I think in terms of my career and my branding, I'm probably more in the progressive Christian strand just because that's what I know best, right?
Yeah, we're coming out of that
system. I know Christianity really well,
and
I have progressive values. So that's who I am. And so that fits well with me in terms of what I can offer the world, how I can serve others and help people. But personally, I don't feel a strong compulsion to box myself in anywhere at the moment. So it doesn't really matter because I can call myself a Christian and there's lots of people who are happy to say I'm not.
Yes, absolutely. You're a heretic and worse.
Sometimes I feel like, well, what's the point? I can say whatever I want. People will not necessarily honor it anyway. So
at least you have that freedom. Well, I've discovered in talking to a lot of people who come out of evangelicalism, that's where I've discovered this spectrum. And one of the things that I came away from doing this research and talking to so many people as far as where people go, they tend to, I wouldn't say it's not a progression. It's just we occupy different points along the spectrum at different points in our journey. And so, as you say, I started numbering these number 1, 2, 3, 4. I think I'm up to about 13 or 14 possible sort of paths. And I say to people, okay, I started out as a number 1, then I moved to number 2, then I'm a 5 and a 6, now I'm a 13. You know, so it kind of becomes this insider talk to like, which number are you? Where are you at on this spectrum? Because, it's not a value thing. It's
so
not
what
like,
number would you say I'm at?
Well, you started out like me on number one, which is the person who has left the church but wants to reform it, really feels right. passionate about that. And then I moved to a number two on my list, which is a person who walked away from the church and never wants to go back ever, just got sick of not being listened to and go, wait a minute, not only do I disagree with the fact that they're not listening to me, no one cares, I'm actually really starting to question some of the core doctrines here and some of the, you know, key tenets about biblical inerrancy and some things like that. And then you start really sliding down the scale. So I don't know. I ended up as kind of an atheist agnostic, which is about number five, number six. But sometimes I'm an angry theist. I can be angry at God as well. So there's a lot of different, you know, I don't know where you might fall, but I could send you the link to my article and, you can tell me where maybe you think you fall on the spectrum.
Yeah, and I think the experience of coming through such a, I don't, is violent the right word? A tumultuous faith shift.
Yeah, it's
I want to give myself a lot of permission to change again, right?
Absolutely.
I'm like, okay, I know from personal experience that you can change drastically. So I don't know what's going to happen to me 5 years from now. And I'm going to try to leave space for whatever is to come.
Exactly.
But I remain committed to sharing the values that I have. And I remain committed to telling the truth and spreading love and doing good in this world.
So this is part of your book project. Maybe we could go into why you wrote your book. Can you remind us again, what's the title of the book and sort of what's the thesis? What's it all about?
Okay, yeah. So it's called Parenting Forward, How to Raise Children with Justice, Mercy, and Kindness. I guess for me, I look at this world and I look at all the problems that we face and it's so daunting and overwhelming. And to me, I feel like one of the best ways that we can help and repair or make this world better is to start with the children, right? To think about how we can raise strong kids so that they don't have to grow up with the kind of problems that we grew up with, that we could break some toxic cycles of pain and shame and raise them better. And so that's the premise of my book. And it's divided into sections. I talk about honoring children's physical and emotional and spiritual autonomy. And then the second half of the book is about how we can partner with our children to do justice in the world. So I talk about homophobia and sexism and racism and how we can raise our kids into these values for equality and love. So that's, how to do justly to children and do justice with children in this world.
So does religion play a factor in that? As you said before, as parents, we can't help but pass along values to our kids, even if we don't actually say, now listen, son or daughter, I'm about to teach you a value here. Now listen up. We just live our lives and they're very good at observing. Yeah. It's funny because my daughters, I have two daughters and they said I was cheap. I was growing up when they were growing up. You know, I never spent any money. But now that they're out on their own, they're so cheap. It's unbelievable. And I say, okay, you always criticize me for being cheap and I never spent any money. But now that you've suddenly discovered how expensive it is to be on your own, you become awfully cheap. You know, so they picked up that value pretty handily. I think I never said, no, you need to be cheap. You don't spend any money on anything. So we can't help it, as you say, but does religion play a factor? You can't help it, especially if you're in a, whatever religion you're in. If you're the parents, how do you not pass that along to your child?
Well, I do talk about honoring our children's spiritual autonomy. I think that the job of parents is not to give our kids values or religion. It's to create a space that's safe enough for them to cultivate it on their own. And so I think that, it's okay. The thing about being an unfundamentalist parent is like you get to have your own boundaries as well. You get to be a human being as a parent as well, right? And so you are allowed to have your convictions and beliefs and faith values, but you also have to honor your child and let them develop their own. And part of that is telling them your story of what you believe, but also giving them the opportunity to, first of all, dissent to you, that they get to disagree with you. They get to have their own opinions and believe their own thoughts, and also exposing them to other ideas so that they have the opportunity to decide, you know, to have more than one option, basically, what they want to choose. So I feel like there are, it's not perfect. You know, we inevitably have power and influence over our kids. And if we do it right, we have a lot of influence. If we gain our children's respect and trust, we have a lot of influence over them. But I think there are some steps and strategies that you can take to give them autonomy and agency. Always checking our power over them, that we're giving our power away instead of dominating over them.
Well, how much of it would you say is cultural? Because, for example, comparing the United States to where I live now here in Great Britain, in America, as you know, and I'm curious to find out how it's like in Taiwan, because here in the UK, we have, in high schools, they have religious education. That's just one of the classes that every kid takes through high school. And it exposes them to sort of all the major world religions. So yes, Christianity, but Islam, Buddhism, Sikhism, Hinduism. Mm-hmm. So they cover a section as they go through the school year, and no one religion is privileged over the other. Whereas I don't think in America they wouldn't have religious education. So of course we see all the culture wars, as you mentioned before, from evangelicals that are fighting against evolution in schools and putting prayer back in schools and blah, blah, blah. Is it different in Taiwan, do you think, the in terms of the culture?
Yeah, I think so. And yeah, America has its unique history and the culture war dynamic that's there. Here in Taiwan, we're a very tolerant society, but we're also very authoritarian. And so there's that culture dynamic. And I think America is probably more authoritarian than Great Britain would be, would you say?
Oh, yeah, definitely. Yeah, far more secular society, even though weirdly we do have in England, and anyway, there is a constitutional connection between the state and the Church of England, but it's nowhere near like it is in America with the intertwining of politics and religion and the church involved in the public sector. Like you see, you just don't see that here. And in Europe, it's even more pronounced. We just came back from a trip to France and Belgium. And we were sitting around the campfire one of the nights at one of our places we stayed in Belgium, and we got into a conversation with people from Holland and Belgium and France, and they were talking about in Europe, church it's just something people just go through the motions. It's not really a thing. It's just a cultural tradition, and it really doesn't play a part in most people's lives other than just maybe they might attend mass. So in Europe, it's even more pronounced.
I mean, I feel like I am obviously very much against indoctrination and forcing religion on kids, but I am a firm believer in cultivating their spirituality, because I feel like as human beings, we are inherently spiritual, and also especially children, I think, can really benefit from some spiritual practices that help ground them in, you know, just all the ups and downs of life, and how tumultuous this world is with the news cycle and the busyness of schedules. And so, yeah, I really appreciate some of the resources that people have for like mindfulness and, you know, for children. And I think that some religious rituals, as long as it's not coercive and fundamentalist, I feel like can be very life-giving for children. So I do include spirituality in my book, Parenting Forward, because I think it empowers, I think healthy spirituality empowers children to live more fully themselves, whereas toxic spirituality does the opposite, right? It takes away their agency.
And introduces a lot of potential trauma, as we talked about. That's the thing, isn't it? Is you go, okay, we need to, as parents, we need to create a space for our children without indoctrinating them or, as you say, being predatory. That's hugely important, isn't it? Because we don't want a bifurcation between the spiritual and the physical realm. That's not healthy either, is it? As you say, spirituality is very important, whatever that looks like for every person. So we don't want to deny that side of the child. So I'm curious to find out, how do you do that as a parent? What are some ways to sort of create that space? As you say, how do you do that?
Yeah, I think the important thing is to follow your child's lead. I think as evangelicals, we were raised to think that we knew more, right? That we were the authority, we were the religious authority, and that pastors, parents, Sunday school teachers knew better than the child. And I think we really need to go through a paradigm shift and understand that no, a child is, spirituality is democracy. Everyone has it, right? Mm-hmm. And even a child has it. In fact, sometimes children can be even more spiritual because they haven't been told by the world that they can't be.
Exactly. Haven't broken their spirit yet.
Allow them, listen to your child, you know, listen, because every kid explores these really deep questions. They think about life. They think about death. They think about who they are in this world, who they are in relationship to the people in their lives. They think about grief and loss and meaning, right? If you give your child the opportunity, they will express those questions. And I think it's really important to give them that opportunity. And sometimes I think it's good to give them the language to express those questions. You know, they can maybe feel a certain way, but they don't quite have the words for it yet. And I think a supporting role that we can have as parents is to give them that language, maybe a book about God or a book about nature or whatever tradition it is that you're used to. You can maybe introduce that as just like a vessel for them to express their spirituality.
Well, that's a really good point you make about kids that they're asking these questions or at least thinking about them, maybe not expressing them. Going back to the American context, we have a whole generation right now of kids that are growing up in public schools. Every day they go off to class, there is the very real possibility of a school shooting. And it's happening all the time. And it's their own. This is the generation that it's happening to. And it's been happening for a long time. So they're expressing, hey, I could die going to school today. I could get shot by one of my classmates. Yeah. That is, I can't imagine the trauma that a parent and the child goes through sending your kid off to school thinking, am I going to see my son or daughter today? Because it's happening all the time. So these are big questions. Right. They're huge, aren't they? As parents, we need to be having those kind of discussions about what happens if you die today. I can't imagine having that discussion with my daughter or son, but it's hugely important.
Yeah, and we're learning so much more about mental illness and emotional intelligence and all these things. And so I think it's important to have conversations with our kids and, you know, stuff like political issues like gun violence and all these things that impact the children. I think it's important to empower them to raise their voice, that they get to have a choice and a voice in what kind of world they're living in. And that's why these, you know, the Parkland teens were so inspirational, because they did use their voice to say, we don't deserve to live this way.
And
I think a big part of Parenting Forward, what I talk about in my podcast and my book, is that we have to empower our children. We have to give them access to spaces like protests and allow them to speak and to write and to use their voice in one way or another to demand a world that they deserve to live in.
Exactly right. And look at some of the statements that came out, as you say, from the kids who survived the Parkland shooting. They are so angry at the adults who created this system, who are beholden to certain political factions and lobbying groups and things like that, that have ensured that this kind of thing will keep on happening, and they're not doing anything to curb it, to stop it, to slow it down, and it's just going to keep happening. So yeah, they're pissed off, and rightly so, and their voices are slowly starting to be heard, even though some of them have been quite vilified by the media and other certain right-wing groups. So yeah, what a world we're living in. I mean, it's just, I can't imagine being a kid today, growing up today, certainly in America. We feel very fortunate that our kids have grown up in high school and post high school outside of America, so we can kind of look at it from the outside. I don't know if you feel that way in Taiwan, looking at America from the outside. I don't know if it's changed your perspective on life in the States, because you did live in America for a while, didn't you?
in college and seminary, a lifetime ago.
A lifetime ago, yeah. I wondered, too. I think about the person I was back then, and I wonder, who the hell was that guy? I don't even know who that person was, mm-hmm. this pastor, this guy that was in Bible college and seminary. I was going to change the world, man, like you. I was going to be a world changer. I was going to go out there and be a force for God and a force for good and all the rest of it. And now I look back and I think, whoa, what was I doing? But I was doing the best that I thought I knew how at the time. That was what I was supposed to be doing.
Right.
I was putting my gifts to use.
Well, I appreciate that about young people. You know, I like that optimism and that desire to change the world. I want to keep that. I do wish that it wouldn't be so misguided.
Yeah, well, the church
is
doing that.
Support, but I do like the earnestness of young people. We need that enthusiasm.
Exactly. Before the world destroys their spirits, we can hopefully have some positive influence in there. How can people get a hold of you? You said you have a podcast as well. What's the best way for people to get a hold of you and listen to your podcast? What's your Twitter handle and what's your podcast called?
My podcast is also called Parenting Forward. It's pretty new. I just launched in July. So I would love for everyone to go check that out. It's on iTunes and wherever podcasts are available. And then you can find me on my website at cindywords.com. And there's my social media handles. They're all on the website, and as well as my podcast and my blogs. And yeah, I would, you know, look forward to my upcoming book in February, Parenting Forward.
Yes. So that's going to be coming out, I'm assuming, on Amazon and everywhere else that fine books are sold, as they say, so people can check out your book. I think it's a really important thing to talk about, isn't it? As we've been saying, how hugely important it is for parents to raise their kids in an environment of support and, as you say, giving them the space to kind of explore. That's a whole new thought, because I was going to say, when I was a kid, I was raised, as you were talking about, in this fundamentalist system, and my parents were taught that you have to, you know, spare the rod, spoil the child. And so they were told that spanking is ordained by God, and the goal of spanking is to break the child's will, so he or she doesn't continue to sin. So they absolutely knew best.
Awful.
That was the system. It was the Bill Gothard Institute and Basic Youth Conflicts that we were raised in. And that's what he taught. Mm-hmm. Parents knew best because that was the God ordained system. And you spank the child till they cry. And once you know they start crying, you've successfully broken their will. And it's an abusive system. It really is. And
I was raised
in it. I hope you weren't raised in such a terrible system, but I got many thousands of spankings growing up, but it didn't help me to break my will to keep, you know, stop sinning. So the system didn't even work.
I think it's been very well documented that spanking damages a child. And so I hope people stop.
Yeah, you can't actually raise a kid without spanking. I think we hardly ever spanked our girls. And we kind of had this discussion at a certain point. We were saying we need to go to alternative methods and, you know, reinforce certain things without, you don't have to go down that route. You can talk to them. You can put them in quiet times. You can do different things that are not so abusive.
There's lots of strategies. Yeah, oh, absolutely. Yeah, if you can find me on, I also have a Facebook page called Parenting Forward, and I'm always offering resources and alternatives to gentle parenting methods. So.
Right.
Check out that for a lot of good resources.
That sounds great. I'm really appreciative of you spending the time trying to get together. You're in the afternoon in Taiwan. I'm in the morning here in the UK, but we somehow made it work. We got the time zones together. So thank you so much, Cindy, for being a part of the show. It's been a great conversation. I've really enjoyed getting to know you, and I'm glad that we're friends on Twitter, and we can support each other on Twitter. If nothing else, I'll tweet something and, it may be inflammatory, but I'll respond to your tweets as well. So that'll be great. So I'm looking forward to more interaction for sure on social media.
Thank you so much for having me.
Yes. Thank you, Cindy, for being a part of Mindshift Podcast. I'm sure we'll stay in touch, and I'm interested to hear when your book comes out. We'll definitely put a plug in for that next February.
Thank you.
I really appreciate what Cindy said in this episode. She said, give yourself permission to change again. Give yourself freedom and space and time. And this is something that's really been hitting me a lot lately as I've been talking to some of the guests, in particular David Hayward. I learned a lot from talking to him. And he said that deconstruction, yes, it's scary and it's threatening. And he described the journey of deconstruction as basically someone going under the knife without anesthetic, and parts of us are getting lopped off. But these parts, yeah, it's painful and it's scary. And these parts we think are absolutely necessary because they formed our very identity when we were still in the system, as Cindy said. And we feel beholden to it because we were part of it for so long. If you're like me, that is, raised in the church and such a part of the system in ministry and all the other aspects of it. But you know what David says is that, yeah, it's painful, it's scary, it's frightening, but it's necessary. It's going to hurt, absolutely. And it's going to take the rest of our lives to process and deconstruct from all the nonsense that we went through and all the crap that we had to deal with. But the key thing is now, what do you do in terms of reconstruction? How do you reconstruct? How do you form a new sense of identity? And I think it's important what Cindy said is you've got to give yourself that space. Give yourself freedom, because you don't have to pigeonhole yourself and say, well, I'm not this anymore, but I'm now this and I can never change again. And part of that too is processing and dealing with all the stuff that was in our past. And this is again something that David Hayward said, is that you can't start reading a person's life from the moment of deconstruction. You have to embrace the whole experience. You have to include the backstory. And that's important too, to realize that that's made us the person that we are becoming. It's part of our whole story. So I hope this has been a helpful episode, kind of helping you process. And especially again, if you're a parent, because I get a lot of questions and comments around this subject of what do you do as a parent? Maybe your children have turned their backs on you because of the way you raised them within evangelicalism in this predatory system. And now what do? You're going to beat yourself up for the rest of your life, feeling horrible about how you raised your kids. You can apologize so many times, but if the kids don't want to hear it, what do you do? And people can be really tormented by this as parents of children who are older now and the relationship is gone. So these are really tough issues. These are hard things that people have to deal with, but hopefully you've found a supportive and empowering community. That's the critical piece of the whole reconstruction element of this whole conversation. You've got to have a community around you that supports you and loves you and gives you encouragement and gives you space and time. And according to David Hayward, those are the things that help empower us to heal ourselves in a way that support from a community. So this is what this podcast is all about. It's about connecting people from literally all over the world. Look at how we've traveled. We've gone from the Great White North of Canada with David Hayward a few weeks ago. Now we're in Taiwan with Cindy Wong Brent, and then next week we're going to be jetting down under to Oz. We're going to be talking with Dr. Josie McSkimming from Sydney, Australia about fundamentalism. So the fact that we're talking to people literally from all over the world, I've had guests on this show from all over the place, all over the world, it shows you the global impact of evangelicalism all over the world and the damage that it can do on so many levels to so many people from all kinds of walks of life and from many, many countries around the world. This is certainly not something that's confined to just the American context. So I hope you've enjoyed my conversation this week and last week with Cindy Wong Brent. I'm looking forward next week, as I say, to bringing you part one with Dr. Josie McSkimming from Australia. I will say too that if you want to follow me on Twitter, you can find me at MindShift2018. Also look for great bonus content, which is available for supporters of this show on Patreon. Not only can you catch early releases of episodes a couple of days before they drop on the Fridays, I usually drop them on Wednesdays on Patreon, but also there's some fantastic bonus conversations with people like Cindy, people like Chris Stroop, David Hayward, and many others, as well as my own thoughts. So there's a great amount of bonus content on Patreon for supporters. So again, you can find out the information for that link in the show notes. All right, I'm going to let you go. I've been your host, Dr. Clint Haycock. Thanks for joining me and Cindy Wong Brandt on this part two episode. I'm going to bring you next week, don't forget, part one with Dr. Josie McSkimming from Australia. So I will see you right here next Friday on Mindshift Podcast.